And we're underway. The winner on to the quarterfinals. Ah, but they equalized! It came out of nowhere! Chested down! Oh, that is spectacular! It's a cup set times two for Union Omaha!
Pereira scores! Orlando City is moving on! How about this blast? Oh, it's incredible! Sacramento is on to the quarterfinal.
Ever to Rodriguez! Santiago Rodriguez!
This is the last thing you want to see if you're LAFC. Oh, boy. It's a
Donnybrook.
Peter, they could be in trouble. Grant Sear for Chicharito!
Just the final nail in the coffin.
Ever rolling down the line, and that was fine for me.
Live and underway here on ESPN Plus. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Herc, I don't know if you're like me, but if you are at all, you are suffering from a serious case of FOMO, fear of missing out on Wednesday night as the round of 16 played out in the U.S. Open Cup. What drama!
What could have been, Seb? What could have been?
What could have been? What could have been? I know you see what I'm wearing.
I do. Where's mine? Are you going to send it out? You're going to keep it for yourself?
It actually is not far. It's right here, actually. It's a large, so you know it won't fit me. But they did get you your gear, so we'll get you taken care of.
My peeps, look at that. And we got, you know what? We got to make a trip.
We got to make a trip. Omaha is on the priority list for Football in America's road trips. We've got a lot to get to in this show. We're going to have part one of an exclusive interview with Juan Carlos Osorio, the former manager of the Mexican national team. Herc, he dropped some bombshells on us. He dropped so many. In fact, we're going to have to split the interview into two. So part two will be next Monday. But really good interview there. Speaking of Mexican soccer, we are also about, what, hour and a half away from kickoff between Atlas and Pachuca, leg one of the Liga MX final. So we'll be talking about that a little bit. And we have a boiling point in the National Women's Soccer League over refereeing. So plenty to discuss there. But let's start with the Open Cup. The magic of the U.S. Open
Cup. Look at that
Cup.
Logo.
Minnesota
Beautiful.
United, Union Omaha, Allianz Field. Of course, the horrible tragedy on Wednesday of the school shooting. A moment of silence there in Minnesota. 6 minute, Minnesota strikes first through Adrian Hunu, Herc.
Hunu, frag a punt right there. Keeper got off-footed. You're expecting to go far post. Hunu hits it near. It's a good little ball by Fragapane right there. Catches him sleeping. Don't want to do that.
So Union Omaha, of course, out of the third tier, USL League One. You're thinking they're in trouble. Wait a second. First half stoppage time. Hugo Kamatani.
Yeah, this is on the goalkeeper.
Is this on the goalkeeper? Early second half, Joe Brito brings it down off his chest.
Oh my goodness, let me see that again.
That's a nice finish, huh?
It brought that down. Look at this, ball's not even gonna bounce. Boom! Right-footed volley, and it's 2-1.
We got a cup set alert late. Minnesota.
Woo!
Oh, denied by the crossbar.
Look at that. Oh, we got drama.
Unbelievable stuff. As Union Omaha and Jay Mims celebrating with their traveling fans, their exceptional stuff. History made, not bad for a club that played its first ever game less than 2 years ago. They're through to the last eight, the first third-tier team to do that since 2013. Back then it was Orlando City SC, but remember, that Orlando City was getting ready to go to MLS. So totally different situation here. There you see it. Congratulations to Union Omaha through to the last eight of the U.S. Open Cup. All right, Herc, let's go big picture here, 30,000 feet. What did we learn about American soccer when we saw Union Omaha out of the third tier beat yet another MLS team in this Open Cup?
We learned a few things. Bear with me here. The first one and the most obvious one is don't underestimate lower division soccer in this country. And what I mean by that is you saw a team that you just mentioned beat Minnesota United, but that's not the only MLS team they beat. Mm-hmm. They also beat Chicago Fire in the Open Cup, and they did it while playing away in both venues. So don't underestimate. And what I mean by underestimate is not us, Major League Soccer. I'm talking about Chicago Fire. I'm talking about Adrian Heath and Minnesota United. And maybe I shouldn't say underestimate, because it leads me to my second point, because they played with two DPs. If you look at that starting lineup, I mean, Minnesota had a very strong lineup. Sans, maybe two or three names. You're saying this is a first-choice lineup. So, yes, but you're Minnesota United. You're playing against a team that's, what you say, third division? So that would lead me to my next point, is that the gap isn't too far off between Major League Soccer and some of these teams. We do this for a living, Seb. There are people in this country who see this game, see Major League Soccer, and they think that's the cream of the crop. And it's not only a step above, but many steps above from different steps or avenues in American soccer. That's not the case. You saw a team, and we both watched this game, a team in Union Omaha that was not only at times more dangerous, but knew how to manage the game better over, you would say, some seasoned professionals. I mentioned that Minnesota United had two DPs, so they underestimated him in a few avenues, and I would say, maybe to an extent, Adrian Heath. Reynoso didn't play, and maybe you're saving him for the week, whatever that case may be, but you were how many games away from a trophy, and now you're sitting at home wishing you did?
I think it's pretty obvious proof here of the depth of soccer in this country, right? And it's not just the players you talk about. Maybe there's not a huge gap between MLS and USL League One, which is the third tier. But it's coaches. Look at a guy like Jay Mims. He's an NCAA coach who gets a professional opportunity because of Union Omaha. Talk about the depth of ownership, right? Yeah. Look at, it's not just Union Omaha. In 2 years, able to build a team that can now reach the last eight of the Open Cup. Look at a team like Northern Colorado Hailstorm, the team that Union Omaha beat in the round of 16. In 2 months, Herc, the people who are running Northern Colorado Hailstorm put together a team that could beat an MLS outfit. Like, there are very qualified soccer people all over the United States, which brings me to the real big point, the crazy point about what I learned last night about U.S. soccer.
All right.
And I know you're going to say, Sebi, I'm not going to the loony bin with you on this one. We need promotion relegation. If what you say is true, if what you say is true, that the gap isn't that much, then we need it for competitive reasons. And even if that isn't the case, Herc, I think we need it for marketing reasons. You and I both know this, again, because we work in the industry. Liga MX rates here. Premier League rates here. Champions League rates here. International soccer rates here. Domestic soccer does not rate here. I know I'm crazy, but tell me I'm wrong when I say from a marketing standpoint, Herc, U.S. soccer needs this. American soccer needs this.
American soccer may need it. I don't know if Major League Soccer needs this, and I don't really care if they want it or don't need it. I just, how do you make it happen? I'm to the loony bin with you, but how do you realistically make that happen? And maybe that's not even it shouldn't be a question. Like, how do we make it happen so these millionaires feel comfortable, billionaires feel comfortable? That shouldn't be the question. Trust me, I've been trying to get an ownership for quite some time.
If there was a way
to win it promotion-wise on the field, Vegas would have a team. It would have a second team to rival the Lights, and it would be owned by yours truly.
There you go. Hercules just shy on that $300 million expansion sticker fee for an MLS team. All right, let's move on to the other action from U.S. Open Cup. Sporting Kansas City and the Houston Dynamo. Pick this one up in the 40th minute. Scoreless game. Darwin Quintero, Corey Baird, Dynamo up one.
Corey Baird, there he is. Good ball by Darwin Quintero, el científico del gol. Científico the assist right there. Good ball between two players. Corey Baird to take that.
1-0 there. Sporting Kansas City going to find an equalizer. Johnny Russell doing it himself.
I love me some Johnny Russell. Like, that is the epitome of Johnny Russell. If there was one play to describe Johnny Russell perfectly, that's it.
Left-footed magic. All even at one in the second half. 72nd minute. Daniel Chaloui taken down for a penalty. Russell converts.
Did I tell you I love me some Johnny Russell? This is a tough one for Paulo Nagamura, the Houston coach, coming back to his old team, Sporting Kansas City.
Elsewhere, Galaxy, LAFC, you're welcome. I drew this. Remember the draw show?
You did.
9th minute, scoreless game. Carlos Vela out on the run here.
Now, you think it was him, like, sprinting for the ball, or you think it was that, like, that crashing into...
I think it's the shot to the head, or something there.
No, I think it's the quad. It's definitely the quad. I'm just trying to figure if it's him colliding right there with Raheem Edwards or not.
It's a contact injury or just kind of pulling up lame. Yeah, so there you see it. Carlos Vela going off, leaving the game. So LAFC without their main man, 36th minute. Oh, yeah, we got some fisticuffs. It's El Trafico in the Open Cup.
Yeah, so Chicharito sees him out of the corner of his eye. Don't think he meant this. Palacios hits it hard. Fall has a a very, very strong reaction from Chicharito. Marky Delgado getting in there as well. All hell broke loose, and we're still in the first half.
1-0 in the second half. Galaxy looking for a second. Grandsir, Chicharito, 2-0.
A pair of assists for Grandsir, but this was a beauty. This isn't an easy finish by no means. Javier Hernandez, a goal scorer's goal, and he got himself one.
Galaxy gonna add one more late. Cabral the back heel, Raheem Edwards, Jovic, 3-1.
Ex-LAFC Raheem Edwards, he's having himself a ridiculous season. And what do you think? What do you say? Just like old times, huh, Seb?
Just like old times. The LA Galaxy against the LAFC and Carson. Awfully tough to beat. There you see the series history between the two. Brief but exciting. Okay, Herc, I'm going to need you to explain it to me like a child, because clearly I didn't listen to you last time. Why can't LAFC win in Carson?
It really is crazy, isn't it, Seb? I mean, they have this mental stranglehold on LAFC. I told you, we've seen this movie many times before. LAFC is flying, they're doing well, the Galaxy is not, and then they play the Galaxy in Carson, Dignity Health Sports Park, and it cures all. We see a different Galaxy. We see a Galaxy that's, not only I hate these cliches, up for it, but is owning the competition. Coming back in dramatic fashion, if you will, or just playing out, papa, just playing out owning the game. It's mental, and it comes down to, you see Los Angeles Galaxy right now, who for the longest time were the super club, were the bar of Major League Soccer. And all of a sudden, we get into the era of the super clubs. These super clubs that come in and they have a big wallet just like the LA Galaxy. They've got big aspirations, they've got ways they want to go about doing things, and they splash and they splurge and they start getting things going. And the LA Galaxy is like, hold on a second, I'm losing footing here in Major League Soccer. What's going on a second? And they're struggling to get back to their winning ways when it comes to lifting MLS Cups. But then all of a sudden, you've got somebody comes into your hometown, a place that you've made yours since inception, and they want to call themselves the best in Los Angeles. And they got shiny new toys and player signings like Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, Rodriguez, et cetera, et cetera, whatever you may want. They've got great ownership, famous celebrity ownership. They've got a nice brand new stadium. And you're like, hold on a second. Are you trying to treat me like second rate? Yeah, you're doing well in the league, but this is LA, and that's what the Galaxy does. When it's LA, when it's their home turf, they defend it like it's their home turf. It's an actual fight, as you saw. For the first time, I saw an LAFC that had no fight. Sure, you can shove somebody, you can push somebody, you can jaw at somebody, but no fight when it came into the game, and it's been all fight for the Galaxy since inception at Carson.
One of the reasons that this is such a surprise is because I think since LAFC has come into the league, we've kind of just assumed that LAFC were the better team in pretty much all these matchups. Do you still feel that way? Do you still think LAFC is a better team on paper, or has that changed as well?
No, that's changed, absolutely. Listen, the Zlatan years, that may have been up for debate because you said it was Zlatan and some pieces. Zlatan doing it by himself, and then what you can do, we'll see, right? Well, with Greg Vanney, you've seen more of a DNA. Now, it's still very hit and miss. There have been games where they defend themselves or for themselves very well, and then all of a sudden they give up in two home games like six goals. So it's still very hit and miss, but it's a better team. And it's still that same Galaxy DNA, and that's the difference here.
I know it's, what, like 3 years ago now? I still think that the remnants of Zlatan's impact on this rivalry remains. You talk about the mental block. Yeah. Zlatan had a big role in establishing that for the Galaxy early days against
that
LAFC.
Opening game,
Zlatan,
man.
No longer the star for the Galaxy. Their new star, of course, Javier Hernandez. And Chicharito, of course, has been in the news for his relationship or maybe lack thereof with Tata Martino of late. But wait, there were reports on Wednesday before the game between LAFC and the LA Galaxy that Javier Hernandez's camp has reached out to Tata Martino. Let's hear from Chicharito himself. This is what he said post-game.
Tema de selección, sé que siempre es tu respuesta, pero hay muchos reportes circulando que se había entablado ya una comunicación para hablar. Si tú nos podías confirmar o dar detalles al respecto.
Sí, sí hubo acercamientos. Sí, claro que sí.
Sí, claro, sí. No more details. Is it something, Herc? Is it nothing? Or is it everything? And by everything, I mean finally, a ticket back into the national team for Chicharito.
It's everything because of what those reports were. Gibran Arreje, a colleague of ours at another network, had said that it was to apologize for what we do not know, but to mend the situation that is Tata Martino, Javier Hernandez, and El Tri. Mm-hmm. That would lead many to believe he would be off that infamous blacklist. And if he's off that blacklist and he's scoring goals again, he was on a little drought, but he's scoring goals again, and we know Javier Hernandez scores in bunches. That means he's up for selection on a team that desperately needs goals, mm-hmm. Seb. They desperately need it. Funes Mori has not been the answer. Raul Jimenez has not been the same Raul Jimenez. Santiago Jimenez, he's still not there yet. JJ Macias, not there yet as well. Julio Furch, who knows if that'll happen or when it'll happen or if Vivi's even going to be in this conversation. Javier Hernandez is the only guy scoring goals, and he happens to be, by the way, the all-time leading goal scorer. In a World Cup year, he's active. So this is everything.
Yep, it's everything. For the reasons that you mentioned, I would also throw in just how much negativity there's been around the Mexican national team. And a lot of that negativity has to do with Chicharito and Los Vetados. Maybe this helps alleviate some of that. It's not just for Chicharito. It's not just for the national team. It's for the media. It's for the fans. It's to have a better feeling around. And you want your all-time leading goal scorers as part of this team. Certainly, Herc, if he's scoring goals, as he was at the start of the season, although he's cooled off quite a bit middle of the season for the Galaxy. So, obviously, this is pretty much Chicharito putting the ball in Tata's court, right? There's no way now, with almost a public mea culpa, that Tata wouldn't take him back, yeah?
There's no way, right? Would never happen. Listen, ultimately, it's still Tata's team, and there are very few windows. And I think this is why the apology or the acercamiento, the getting the two parties together happens now, because there's very few windows from now until the World Cup to actually make this happen and get himself in.
Hey, if you needed a Mexican striker for a goal over 90 minutes today, who would be at the top of your list?
Javier.
And Chicharito's in the pool.
Javier Hernandez. It has to be. If I'm trying to win a game, if this is a World Cup, and I remember you said something to me, Seb, a while back. This is all fair. You said to me, go back and look at that World Cup. All the good plays for Mexico, all the goals went through Javier Hernandez. I scoffed at it. I went back and looked at it. That Chucky Lozano goal, that went through Javier Hernandez. That wasn't his goal. That was Javier Hernandez using his feet and setting it up.
All right, so next for Javier Hernandez and the LA Galaxy, Sacramento Republic. That's because Sac Republic got it done Wednesday against San Jose. 27th minute, Rodrigo Lopez a corner, Luis Felipe the header. 1-0 Sacramento.
Oh, San Jose, take it seriously. You played the same lineup you did against Seattle. It worked out for you because Seattle had a weaker lineup. The Republic ain't about that. That's the first.
Nope, Sacramento Republic up 1-0, 83rd minute. They're going up 2. It's your boy, Roro.
Ohana! You know what that means?
Family.
Family. Yes, it is.
And what's the connection here again, just for everybody?
He's married to my cousin on my father's side. So this is
beautiful.
Yeah, so he's family there. Look at this bullet.
Oof.
Look at Roro Lopez. He's got some MLS experience, Chivas USA, Liga MX experience at Veracruz and Ascenso. The man can play. He can ball.
Absolutely. Balling right there as the Quakes go out. Sacramento Republic moving on. Here's what we're calling the Western Central half of the bracket. Sporting Kansas City against Union Omaha in one quarterfinal, LA Galaxy, Sacramento Republic in the other. All right, let's get to Inter Miami and Orlando. This one got good late. 94th minute. That's right, 94th minute.
Oh.
John Mota, yes.
Oh, look at the movement here from John Mota. I should say lack thereof. It kind of knuckles on the goalkeeper right there. Can't do anything about it.
All right, so Inter Miami up, but not up for long. Orlando responds 3 minutes later. Facundo Torres.
That's Nani's number, but that ain't Nani, but he's moving like Nani, weaving like Nani, and shooting like Nani.
Penalties. 1-1. DeAndre Yedlin steps up, and the national teamer misses.
Oh, come on, DeAndre. It's the hair.
Mauricio Pereira for Orlando City. And in the Florida Derby, Herc, Orlando gets it done.
What's this called? Sol Clásico?
I don't know, but I like it. I like it.
All right.
Another look at it there as Orlando City get the better of their in-state rivals. Nashville visiting Louisville City. 37th minute. Brian Ownby. Oh, we got a cup set in the works.
Oh, we got a cup set. Look at this. Good little early service. I love an early service, and this is a great header. Keeper going the other way. Very difficult to deal with.
Nashville striking back in the 39th. Akeloba.
There he is. There he is. One of the highest transfers, I believe it's the highest transfers, for Nashville in their history, and he plays the cup games.
1-1, late, real late, 89th minute, Hani Mukhtar for the win!
Yeah, that's what you need. Your big players, DP players, stepping up in big moments. Dagger for Louisville.
So close to a cup set, Nashville advances. New York City, New England Revolution. 94th minute, extra time, Santiago Rodriguez.
Oh, midweek on this turf. I can only imagine what Tati Castellanos is thinking. Like, wait a second, I've got multi-million-dollar transfer fees that you guys are saying no to, and you got me playing on this field? All right, well, let me do this at least.
Exactly. Tati, Eber, Santiago Rodriguez. And that's the only goal in the game is New York City. FC advances. How about the New York Red Bulls taking on Charlotte FC? Danny Rios, he'd get on the board in this one. First minute. Red Bulls from the corner kick. That's a good way to start the game.
Yeah, I think it might have been a penalty anyways. Falls to him and he'll take it.
1-1 late. And there's the backbreaker. Charlotte going behind 2-1.
Uh-oh. It's a rout. Yeah, you know, it's tough. You're chasing the game, you got yourself opened up, and they take advantage.
Yep. Tom Barlow there with the last goal for the New York Red Bulls as they advance. They're going to face New York City FCR in a Hudson River Derby there in one of the quarterfinals in the northeast-southeast half of the bracket, then Orlando City against Nashville FC. Herc, we got 8 teams left in the Open Cup. Who's your favorite from the remaining field?
You know, when I said this, I know you were surprised, but I went with the Los Angeles Galaxy. And
I'm only surprised because I've been listening to you for the last, like, 2 weeks on this show, and all you do is talk about how bad they are every time it's an MLS good, bad, and ugly. They're not scoring. Chicharito's not scoring. That's the only reason I was surprised. Your own data.
Well, not my own data. Well, they were playing well while they were losing 3-0 at home? No! But this is a cup tournament. This is a cup format, and there are two different forms for teams. There's your cup form, and then there's your domestic league form, and they obviously have that. Now, they recuperate Javier Hernandez. He's back on the score sheet, and you know he's going to score in bunches. But here's what I like. Raheem Edwards, you know what you're going to get from him. I've been seeing a better defensive team overall this year. The body of work has been better from Greg Berhalter. They're honestly one piece away from being a very good team in that midfield if it can be a good two-way player. Heads up, Cabral is all of a sudden showing flashes. He's a very frustrating player. He reminds me of Vinicius for Real Madrid. Vinicius Jr. in his first 3 seasons. The frustrating Vinicius Jr. If you could put it together on the field, this guy's going to be dangerous. You saw what he could do last night. I think they're just so dangerous. And they're going to have another home game, so they're spotting me a game there, so
There it is. The Galaxy under Greg Vanney, a threat to win the U.S. Open Cup, says Hercules Gomez. I'm going slightly different. I'm going New York City FC. Now, I feel like this is probably what Las Vegas would tell us, right? If they're looking at the 8 teams left in this tournament.
This would be the final.
New York City FC and L.A. Galaxy is probably, right, your final, at least what most people would expect. So I think it's going to be New York City FC. We got a lot of reasons why. We've got a recent track record, right, in knockout competitions. Not just what they did, I think, in MLS Cup, obviously, but to some extent what they did in the CONCACAF Champions League. The concerns here for me would be, like, you're not going to be at home. You're probably not going to be at home for a final if you do get it, because we know New York City FC doesn't exactly have the facilities for that. The other point here is the Open Cup final, Herc, isn't until, what, first or second week of September?
Yeah.
That's another transfer window.
Tati.
And if Tati Castellanos is not around when New York City FC does eventually potentially reach this final, it changes their chances dramatically. So here's a look then at those 8 matchups. You got a game that stands out to you?
Obviously Union Omaha, Sporting Kansas City. Sorry. Sorry. I was listening to the producer for a second. Yes, Union Omaha. Apologies.
It's got to be Union Omaha. Got to be Union Omaha. We give them, what do you think, a decent shot to make the semifinals? I mean, Sporting Kansas City not exactly pulling up trees.
Listen, Sporting Kansas City struggled against Dallas. They had a comeback win. They struggled against Houston. Omaha's playing with some spirit. They're playing a good way. defensively well. They're good in transition, and they're getting some very good goals. Could be done.
All right. We hope so. Hopefully you'll get to wear your Union Omaha gear
next time here
on Football Americas.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Our next guest here on Football America is none other than Juan Carlos Osorio, a man who has managed up and down the Americas, although you probably know him best from his time with the Mexican national team at and leading up to the 2018 World Cup. El Profe joins us here on the show. Juan Carlos, great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. And before we started, I would like to ask all the people involved, including those who are watching the program, just to be a little bit patient with me.
Perfect. Well, listen, if anyone knows about patience, it's me. I work with Hercules Gomez on a semi-daily basis. Y cualquier cosa aquí la podemos traducir de español a inglés.
Right,
So listen, since you left the Mexican national team, you've been kind of off the radar for a lot of our audience. You spent a lot of the last few years in Colombia. It's a football that we don't see a lot of. I wonder kind of what your experience was like there, and how does Colombian football in that league compare to the other stops on your career?
Very interesting question. I decided myself to stay in Colombia because both of my parents are alive, close to 90 years old, and I wanted to be near them. And also, my oldest son is in sixth semester of medical school, and I want to be near him.
Juan Carlos, you know, you've been to a lot of different places. Some of those stops, one of those stops, I should say, was Major League Soccer, Chicago, 2007. I'm curious what your experience was like back then in 2007 in Major League Soccer, and maybe some of the changes you've seen from afar now that you've gotten a step away from Major League Soccer.
Right. I am obviously biased about my opinion of the MLS, because I am very thankful to United States, because that's when I went to school on a scholarship and I play, work, and initiated my professional career. But I have always said that if there is one league that is a model for everybody else, is the MLS. Because obviously with things to improve, is probably the league in the world that has progressed the most, because the top salary cap, because the ideas of trying to always compete at the same level, and that's something that is very, very difficult to find. I think it's only in the United States where, and probably following other sports like basketball and American football, the rules are to try to play at the same level. That doesn't happen in South America. Here, everybody, the richest club buys the best players, and the clubs that they don't have the resources, obviously they don't have access to those top players. So the competition is never on the same level. Whereas in America, it's always the same level. And I think if you get that in place, then the tactical part of the game can make you either be successful or not successful, but not because you have the advantage of having a better squad. And if we translate that into international football, that's what That's why some clubs like Real Madrid take a big chance in bringing big, big time players and trying to get at the same level of competition with other teams. In America, it's very difficult. It's very different. United States is very equal to everybody, and that's probably the thing that I admire the most, and probably the thing that I criticize the most in South American football, that is not that even level of competition.
One of the players that you got to work with while you were in Major League Soccer, I know it was a while ago, but I doubt you forget working with a guy like Cuauhtémoc Blanco. Is he the best Mexican player you ever coached?
Cuauhtémoc was something else. I would say that when we coincide at in Chicago, the thing that amazed me the most was that even though he couldn't speak the language, he will just not lose the ball. He will protect the ball like we say it in South America. It's like a loving girlfriend. You never expose them. You keep it for yourself, and you don't. You do everything to protect her. And that's what Cuauhtémoc did. And he did the Cuauhtenilla and all the things that he did just to protect the ball. And he couldn't communicate himself, but his competitiveness was there to be shown and to be admired for the rest. So as long as he gives us his 100%, then he will be fine. As far as being the best Mexican player that I ever coached. Well, I would say that there are three that I put on the same category. Rafael Márquez, you know, he won everything with Barcelona, and he was a big influence in the squad, even in the World Cup 18 in Russia, when he had to play against Brazil. The other two players were Héctor Herrera and Andrés Guardado, two central midfielders, box to box, number eight in many football cultures. Number eight, no number six, no number tens, but number eight, box to box, and being able to play football, to keep the ball and go forward, and also try to defend themselves when it was needed. So I would say that those four players were the Mexican players that I ever coached.
Wow. You know, that's interesting, because a lot of people would say just based off talent alone, Carlos Vela would kind of sweep everybody on that list.
Oh, Carlitos. Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I have to. Sorry. I apologize.
No problem.
As far as talented, Carlos was the best player ever. There is a study in Carla 12 at Stanford University, where she talks about the personality of the athletes, and they said fija, which is almost like fixed versus progressive, and the fixed type of personality are those who can play with and only talented with talent. And that was Carlos Vela.
Yeah.
Very, very, very talented players. If he could have add to his game more commitment, more discipline, and more like extra work going to the gym, I think Carlos could have the potential to be one of the best players in his position.
You've coached a lot of good players in the Mexican national team, and it leads me to ask the question of why exactly you left the Mexican national team after the World Cup. But did you want to stay? Was it offered? What happened there, Juan Carlos?
Hercules, very interesting question, and I agree to come to your program and speak the truth. I think that was my biggest mistake. When we were in the World Cup I was approached by Colombian executives, by Colombian officials, and they promised me that I was going to be the next Colombian national team manager. And obviously, I am very proud to be Colombian. There are two nations that I really, well, three now, that I really, I am very helpful. A, my own country, Colombia. B, United States, because that's where I went to university. That's where I started working and producing money and consolidating myself as a professional. And C, Mexico, for giving me the opportunity to go to the World Cup. But when we beat Germany, and we, as you probably know, we took Brazil on the quarter of the World Cup. We took them to the 68-minute, almost 70-minute. Then the Mexicans changed their point of view, and they wanted me to stay. But it was my decision to quit because I believe in the Colombian Federation. And it turned out to be not the case, because then they decide on another coach for another circumstances. So I think, Hercules, that was a big mistake on my part to leave Mexico, where I was having, I think, a very good football career. And I think in another four-year cycle, I could have done better things.
Was that on the table, Juan Carlos? That four-year cycle, was that offered to you by the Mexican FMF?
Yes. A lot of people don't know that, but after beating Germany and playing against Brazil, the Mexican Federation offered me the next 4 years, and I was very naive, and I believe in the Colombians executives and the Colombians bosses, and at the end they play that play against my career.
It sounds like you have some regret, Juan Carlos, about the decision and the time. Would you ever consider in a future coming back to Mexico in the national team?
Well, as I just said, I believe that any human being is thankful with those who has helped him to become what he is. And in that regard, I was born in Colombia, so obviously I love my country. My parents are still alive, as I said. I live here, but I am very thankful to the United States, and that's a country that I know someday I will come back to work and to compete and hopefully to give my input, whatever input I can make, because it's a country that I feel very thankful to. And Mexico, because they give me the chance to go to the World Cup, which is probably the best scenario for any coach in the world.
You know, Juan Carlos, there are very few people who know this Mexican national team and their superstars like you. You know this pool inside and out. So I have to ask you about one of the most polemic figures right now. Craziness that he's a polemic figure right now is Javier Hernández, Chicharito Hernández, and everything that's going on with Javier Hernández and him not being part of this national team setup. You, as somebody who was his coach and knows what he's like, not seeing him part of this setup, what are your thoughts?
Well, I will start by saying that Javier has the knack, as they say in England, the knack for the goal. He will score some wonderful goals, but he will also score the usual number nine goals. Raul is a different type of player, and when I have them two, I try to provide with an opportunity for both of them to be in the team or at some point play together, because I think when you have two players in the same position that are very influential in the game, you have to look in a structure, in a system that you can play them together. But that was not the case in that particular time for me. So Javier was always a figure that can bring along all the rest of the players, where Raul was were more distant. Now, I think with time, Raul has improved a great deal, as I expected, playing for Wolves. And I think that's probably the most opposition that Javier can have, because now there are other strikers that are improving and that are reaching that point where the difference is minimum, and the fact that Javier is not there is a question that I always ask to myself: what could have happened to him? Because I always thought that he would be there for the next World Cup as well.
All right, Herc, again, part two of that interview on next Monday's edition of Football Americas with Juan Carlos Osorio. But there we see the comparison between JCO and the current man in charge, Tata Martino. Herc, good chat with El Profe. What was your big takeaway?
The bombshell he dropped about wanting to stay, or I guess
regretting not staying,
and FMF wanting him to stay, offering him a second cycle. That's a news headline right there.
Yeah, right. In terms of like thinking about Mexico and the potential of an 8-year cycle for a coach, is what they've been talking about recently with Tata Martino. I guess maybe we could have seen it.
Hugo Sanchez has been talking about his whole life.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They owe him years. They still owe Hugo some years. All right, let's get to some more news from around the world. Brendan Aaronson, Herc. We talked about it on Monday's edition of Football Americas, but it is now official. Brendan Aaronson to Leeds, confirmed for a fee just under $30 million, as reported by ESPN. Got a contract through 2027.
Yeah, the most interesting part about this is I've heard some of his interviews for the channel at Leeds, and it sounds like regardless of Jesse Marsh or not, he was going to be there anyways.
Let's hear some of those interviews. Here's Aaronson.
So what were your first sort of feelings, you know, when you kind of learned of that interest and learned that it was a possibility?
I mean, me and my girlfriend, not knowing, had watched the documentary a few years back, and we had known about Leeds, and we had seen them go up to the English Premier League the next year later. But I mean, I had known a lot about Leeds at that time and what a famous club it is and the fans and how dedicated they are. It was just a kind of a dream place for me.
So how gripped were you by Leeds' conclusion of this season then?
Oh, I think I've said this story a few times, but I was in Vienna with my girlfriend and we were just sitting in a cafe watching the game, but I couldn't contain myself the whole game. I was sweating, I was pacing around the cafe, and it was tough to watch, but they pulled it through and they got the win.
And what did you see in that game and from what you've seen of Leeds and the club that you feel this is going to be a good home for you?
Just, I think, the family feeling that I get from here, you know? It's like this, it's big family, and it's an amazing feeling that I get from the club, you know? And for me, I think what's big is this family, and for me to come in and know everybody and feel like I'm a part of it already, it's a great feeling, and it makes me feel like I can come in and do my thing.
Well, you know one member of the family pretty well, don't you? So how much of that was an aspect in your decision as well of linking up with Jesse Marsh again?
Yeah, for sure. It was a huge part of it too. I mean, Jesse's a fantastic coach. I worked with him for half a year at Red Bull Salzburg, and he was amazing. So I was grateful to work with him then, and I'm grateful to work with him again, and yeah, I'm excited.
What do you feel he gets out of you, and what do you sort of get from that relationship?
Yeah, with the half a year that I played under him, he taught me a lot, you know. He taught me how to get in the final third, to score goals, to get assists, and that's something I'm looking to bring to here.
And how do you feel about the challenge of playing in the Premier League?
It's exciting, you know. It's a dream of mine, and it's something that I want to achieve, and I want to do big things with Leeds. That's a dream of mine too, and to be around the players that we have at this club and to take this next step, and I want to be a part of it.
Congratulations to Brendan Aaronson. We got some more dual national news. Luka Koliosho, Herc, a 17-year-old who's eligible for Canada and the U.S., just accepted a Canada call-up days after making his La Liga debut with Espanyol.
He's got some options. A very young player, turning a lot of heads. Supposedly, this call-up he's accepting does not mean he's closed the door on the U.S. men's national team and their pursuit, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yep, the youngest American-born player ever to debut in La Liga. U.S. men's national team against Morocco next Wednesday on ESPN2. Do not miss it. Big tune-up game for the Stars and Stripes as they begin the long march to the Qatar World Cup. And your boys will be part of the festivities. Do not miss us as we make our linear TV debut, plus a full post-game on ESPN+.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, let's transition to the women's game. Second leg of the Liga MX Femenil final between Chivas and Pachuca on Monday night in Guadalajara. Chivas was up 4-2 after the first leg. They end up losing the game 1-0, thanks in part to that golazo. But Chivas win 4-3 on aggregate. What a moment, Herc.
What a banger. Pachuca, let's give them some credit. That's men and women's two finals. And we got a penalty kick, right? Who's going to take this? Who's going to take this, Seb?
It had to be Charlene Corral.
Look at
that. And how about that save? Blanca Felix. She was just huge, a monster in this match. No moment bigger than this one.
It's a massive save. And versus who, no doubt, no less, I should say. Unbelievable moment for her. And Pachuca would try and try as they may, but this was just written in the cards. It's written for Chivas de Guadalajara. La segunda.
Felix, another big save there at the end. She was all over the place, but there you see it. Chivas are your champions of Liga MX Femenil. I don't know, Herc. You used to always tell me Monterrey is the seat of power in Mexican women's football.
It is.
It is, it is. The data there suggests as much.
I mean,
anyway, I don't know if you caught this, Herc, during this match, or maybe it was actually kind of right after. As Chivas is celebrating their title, the owner, of course, is the man who's the owner of both the men's team and the women's team at Chivas, Amaury Vergara, was booed as part of the celebrations. There you can see, Nat sound up. Let's hear the boos as Vergara there walks around with his trophy. Boy, they were giving it to him, huh?
Shameful stuff.
Herc, are you cool with it? Are you cool with the Chivas fans here booing Amaury Vergara?
I am not cool with this. This is shameful, shameful things from the Chivas de Guadalajara fan base, La Fiel out there. I shouldn't say La Fiel, it's Atlas, but the faithful for them. It takes away from the moment. The moment it is celebrating the women of Chivas de la Guadalajara, the Liga MX Femenil, their team, what they have done, their accomplishment. What you're essentially saying is you are being booed because of what you have done or not done with the men. You are taken away from the great moment that is these women. There's a reason these women have done so well. And Amaury Vergara, yes, even if you may not like it, is a huge part of that. He's a huge part of their resources. He's also a huge part of promising higher salaries for these women. After this win, he's gonna promise higher salaries. So it's not all negative with Amaury Vergara. What these people are saying is, I don't care what you do with the women or how good the women get, we don't like you because of what you've not done on the men's side, and it's not about that.
It's disappointing because the fans that are booing here are saying the men are more important than the women. That's really what they're saying. And what's unfortunate is those fans are the ones that are in the stadium to watch the women's team play in a final. Those should not be the fans that are more focused on the men's team, and they should definitely not be more focused on it right after the women's team just won a title. I'm with you. I think 99% of the blame here is on the fans. Amaury Vergara is a little bit naive if he's going to claim that this surprised him in any way. He could have been present. He could have been with the team in the locker room and not been as visible. He knows that when he goes out there, and hey, he wasn't being quiet about it. He was doing the victory lap with the trophy. He knows he's going to draw the ire of those fans. He also made it a little bit about himself.
Absolutely. And there's nothing that fans hate more than owners taking credit, than owners lifting the trophy before the players, than owners being the main attraction when it comes to these types of moments. So I understand what you're saying, but come on, man. There are moments to really celebrate people, to really celebrate achievements, and this is one of them for Nelly Simone, our ex-colleague here at ESPN, and Chivas Femenil.
All right, more Liga MX Femenil news. Now as it connects to NWSL, we got a partnership announced between Tigres and Angel City FC, Herc. It's going to include two friendlies, the first of which will be August 10th in L.A. I bet you they'll get a pretty good crowd for that. What do you say?
Decent crowd. You think our friend Julie can score some seats for us or what?
I don't know, man. I know there's some Tigres fans there in L.A., so I think they could get... Might be a sellout. You never know. We'll see what kind of crowd it draws. They're also going to play a friendly in Mexico that date, TBD. But very exciting stuff as we continue to see the growing relationship between the two leagues. More NWSL news here. The league has fined both the Washington Spirit and head coach Chris Ward for comments about the league's refereeing. Ward's comments came after Washington's 1-1 draw with Portland back on May 18th, which is last Wednesday. Let's hear what Chris Ward had to say.
You know, Emily Sonnet gets kicked in the ribs in the Orlando game. Broken ribs in the very first game. And the league's response is, well, she finished the game. Are you out of your mind that that's your response when someone clearly gets kicked twice, has broken ribs, and your response is, she finished the game? Because she's a warrior. Because she's strong. And you're not going to do anything to protect it. It's absolute madness. It is so beyond the pale, because then they turn around and they give Ashley Hatch a fine. And if anyone's met Ashley Hatch, you know what type of person she is. The league has to do a better job. They absolutely have to do a better job. And it's, you know, I don't know what it's going to take, because they've already injured Trinity. They've already broken bones on two of our players. I don't know what else it's going to take for them to step up and actually take this seriously. It's so frustrating.
All right, Herc, it's time for somebody to get lost. The question is who? Are you giving the get lost to Chris Ward or to the National Women's Soccer League?
I'm not giving it to Chris Ward. He's protecting his players. That's what any coach would do. Any coach would fight for the safety of his players. And also, for what fans want to see. They want to see the most talented players on the field and staying safe, you know, doing what they do best with the ball. So you want to protect those type of players. But my understanding here, and this is why it's NWSL and maybe U.S. soccer in general to get lost, is when it comes to allocating these referees, it's on a tiered system. So that means in their tiers, Major League Soccer is the highest. Mm-hmm. That would essentially mean, because VAR is in Major League Soccer, that the best referees in American soccer go automatically to Major League Soccer. And everything else, all these other scraps, excuse my reference right there to the referees, are left to the rest of American soccer. So in a league that presumes to be one of the best, if not the best in the world, NWSL, you don't have the best referees to accompany said product, these women. And that is sad. That is heartening. And that is what you should get lost with.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, Herc, especially when it comes down to, at the end of the day, money, right? And we hear all the time in the NWSL about all this new money coming into the league, all these new sponsors. What did we hear from Angel City FC? Something like $35 million. Let me read you some numbers. Mm-hmm. An NWSL center ref, right, head ref, will make $461 for a game. Forget about what MLS officials make, which is way more than that. USL, which is drawing from the same tier of refs, right? That second tier of refs, according to pro referees and kind of how they rank their officials, they get $529 a game for in the USL. So if you're just a ref trying to pick between the two, you're going to go to the USL. NWSL needs to step up. It needs to invest now in refereeing, and not just refereeing, Herc, but VAR. Right? Because you mentioned MLS has VAR, and because of that, they're getting a lot of these tier one referees. They're not available for the other leagues. NWSL needs VAR. You can't have, as you say, a league that wants to be one of the best in the world not have VAR. We just can't have it anymore. So I think it's time now for the NWSL to step up. It's time for pro referees to step up and qualify more referees for this top tier. And to your point about the federation, it's also saying, hey, you're going to give NWSL this tier one status, right? Division one status, like you give it to MLS, and you demand that MLS players have the protections afforded of them for a tier one referee. Why aren't NWSL players worthy of that? If they're truly the top tier, then they better be getting the same refs. That would be my point.
That's a good point.
Fair enough?
That's fair enough.
All right, let's move on. What's next here on Football America? Oh, yeah, actually, let me remind you, over on the website, ESPN.com, full article about this from Jeff Kasouf. You can read more about it over there on ESPN.com. More from the women's game, the UEFA Champions League. Of course, wrapping up this past week, Lyon beating Barcelona in last weekend's final. UEFA announcing their team of the season. No surprise, there's quite a few Lyon players on it. Amandine Henry, remember, she scored that amazing banger to open the Champions League final, as well as a big contingent on that defensive line. Christine Endler, the Chilean goalie as well. Ada Hegerberg up top. Herker, you noticed something? There's somebody from this Lyon team that is not in this 11. Huh. And you know who else noticed it?
Who?
The person themselves, Katerina Macario. Let's check in on what we found in the mentions. Well, it wasn't really a mention. It was more like a quote tweet, but here's what Katerina Macario had to say. LOL, 9 goals, title winner. Thanks for having me, guys. I'll try again next year. All right, so Katerina Macario, not happy about being left off the Women's Champions League team of the season. It's definitely shots fired. Are those shots from Macario warranted?
Absolutely. I could absolutely see myself doing the same thing. In this. I mean, for a second, who picks these teams, right? Who picks these teams? Because we've seen this happen a lot of times. I researched who picks this team. A technical observer panel. These are just pure numbers. There are only 2 players who scored more goals, okay, than Katerina Macario, and they're on it. Nobody else, okay? And if we talk about knockout round goals, 5 goals, second most. If you want to take out penalty kicks, the most knockout round goals. And yet here's a player who has the numbers, has the trophy, but doesn't have the respect here. What's going on?
That's it, right? It's the respect. And this is actually a huge problem in the women's game, and it has been for a long time. When it comes to big awards, people tend to vote, and they do this in the men's game as well, but in the women's game, it's even worse, overwhelmingly on reputation and kind of your Wikipedia almost, right? And if we look at the players, Katoto Egerberg, who get it over Macario, they're far more established, Herc. So I know as a player, that's got to drive you nuts. It's not always who deserves it. A lot of times, it's who the voters know.
That's the thing. It's like this Hall of Fame voters for U.S. soccer. And we used to have these discussions. They're baseball writers, no offense to the baseball writers, but they don't follow soccer anymore. So they go with what they know. They go with what they can Google and find on Wikipedia. And by the way, whoever did my Wikipedia page absolutely hates me.
There it is. Well, you're on TV enough. Maybe someday you'll get into the Hall of Fame there. Katerina Macario, no Champions League team of the season, but I think she'll be okay. She's got the trophy that really matters as Lyon beat Barcelona. Also from the women's game, in case you missed it earlier this week, Herc, we got some big news in the NIL world, the name, image, likeness world. Nike has signed its first high school NIL athletes, and they are soccer players, Alyssa and Giselle Thompson of, hey, look at this, Los Angeles.
Yeah, Thompson sisters. Nike's swooping up everybody.
I know.
I feel like not too long ago we spoke about the girl from UCLA. Oh, I forgot her name. Oh, no, it's going to kill me. Oh, I'm so sorry. But Nike's doing big things.
Nike, going big in the soccer space.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, that's it for today's edition of Football Americas. Enjoy your weekend.
That's
enjoy
it.
Your holiday weekend.
That's
we
it.
Will be back on Monday. We will be working. That is correct. And don't forget, next week, we're on TV. Big TV. Football Americas. Linear television debut after U.S. Morocco on June 1st. We'll see you next week.
You coming to L.A.?
Go Union Omaha. I'm coming to L.A. You know it.
Bring my shirt.
I will bring it.